Varicosity Vein Center, providing vein treatment relief for vein disease, spider veins, and varicose veins for over 20 years. Their team of doctors and vein specialists deliver techniques and care for residents in Jackson, Madison, Ridgeland, and Central Mississippi. Information and appointment scheduling at varicosityveincenter.com.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.
Deep South Dining is the show all about the culture of Southern flavor, from fried chicken and collard greens to shrimp and grits and a glass of sweet tea. Subscribe now to the podcast using any podcast app or download our MPB Public Media app.
Welcome back to Horticulture Filter Rushing, and we're going to talk about gardening. It's been some weird weather, and I know a lot of people are wondering what they should or should not be doing right now, or whether you want to or not, but we're going to talk all about it. It's a live program, so if you want to give us a call, it's toll-free. We'll give the numbers over and over, but it's...
Come on, Felder.
Hey, man, I was just doing some homework. I came up with a couple of weird things to talk about, because, you know, a lot of people, they're in and out. They're doing a whole lot of stuff, seasonal things, non-seasonal things. You were out last week because somebody had this bright idea of having a university graduation on a Friday morning when people have real jobs to do.
Man, tell me about it. But salute once again to all of the graduates from Jackson State University last week. Well, yeah, this time last week, 1 week ago from today, yeah?
Yep, and your sister graduated. Hooray!
Yeah, big time in the city, big time. Congratulations.
Yes, indeed. And good luck. It's a weird world out there, ain't it? Hey, listen, I got a whole bunch of things I want to talk about, but I'm hoping people call in because this time of year, Java, you know, I'm on the Mississippi Gardening Facebook site a good bit, seeing what real gardeners have to say. And there's horticulturists on there also. There's quite a few extension people, but mostly it's just amateur gardeners saying, what should I do? Is it too late? Is it too early? All that kind of stuff. And this is the chance to actually talk to somebody who wonders the same stuff. Did I do this too late? Should I have done that? When is it time? So if anybody has questions about what to do or not to do or how to get their poinsettia to bloom or is it too late to plant daffodils, all those kind of things, this is a good chance to talk. Won't try to sell you anything. Luckily, on National Public Radio and Mississippi Public Broadcasting, we have underwriters but not advertisers. So I feel free to say whatever I would do or whatever I would ask my son to do. And Java, my son's going to decide what old folks' home I go into, so I got to be right.
You got to treat them well. Treat them well.
That's right. So how's it going with you?
Oh, it's going good, man. You know, these are the weird, where you are, you was talking about how it's kind of freezy, rainy, but over here, it's the 39, 40 degrees in the morning, 60, almost 70 during the afternoon type of December, you know, a couple of days from Christmas weather.
Yeah, and believe it or not, even though we like that, it's not really that good for plants. And we can talk about that later. But we're here to yak with real folks, and we're going to go up to Oxford and talk to Chico. Good morning, Chico. How you doing, man?
Hey, good morning, y'all. I got a gardening question, Felder, but I want to say it's good to have Java back in there this morning, and I'm still happy about his promotion at MPB. I think that's great. You know, if Java was the E Street Band, those dudes that work for Springsteen, he would have moved up from being the big man to the boss.
I tell you what, Chico, he's now my boss. He's boss, but I'm going to tell you this, and Java, I'm going to brag on you. Java decided he's going to keep hosting and producing the Gestalt Gardener because we have fun. Of course, they have fun in other places, too, but I appreciate him sliding out of the big corner office into the production booth every now and then. Appreciate it, Java. Thank you, man.
We're here for gardening questions, guys. Come on now.
I got one.
What's up, Felder?
Yeah. Felder, I was reading the September 27th, 2023 issue of Country Life magazine. It's an English magazine.
Right.
And I was reading about gardening, and it appears that over there they call roly-polies the soft woodlouse.
Yeah, woodlice.
And that they're real good in gardening.
Well, they're like worms and roaches and other things like that. They don't really destroy existing plants. They'll take if something gets started on the plant, they'll help hollow it out. But they're macro composters is what they are. They call them wood lice, roly-polies, you know, all sorts of things. But sow bugs, often called sow bugs. I think it's called, they're sort of shaped like a sow pig. I'm not sure of it. They're cool little critters. And they mostly eat decayed stuff and stuff that's soft and already decayed. Like, you know, if you get a something started on a strawberry, they'll take it from there.
Well, do we have the same roly-polies they got over there in England?
Actually, you know, there's actually several different species. Some can roll up in a tight ball, some can't. But it's sort of like millipedes and centipedes and spiders. There's different kinds, but they're essentially the same genus type thing.
I read that they're part of the lobster family, so I'm going to have to try one.
you're going to need a spoonful.
Well, I'll call in the Deep South Diamond about that, and I hope Java's there, too.
There you go. And they're small enough where you can swallow them, shells and all, I bet. Man, what a weird thank you, Chico. What a weird question.
All right,
that's a way to kick it. How about that, Java? That's a way to kick it off.
Now, a part of the lobster family, I did not know that.
Well, you know, if you think about it, you know how lobster tail curls up, and roly-polies do the same thing, and shrimps and all. They're crustaceans.
Okay.
So, yeah, but, you know, and matter of fact, I think they're really, really cool. They don't bite, they don't sting, and they just crawl around and help break stuff up, you know, old leaves and rotten fruit and things like that. They're kind of cool. They'll, in a garden, if you got something soft and moist like strawberries, you know, they can sure chew into that, but usually they're secondary pests are not real direct threats.
Now, that's those leads me to a question I have. Is the amount of, like, bugs and things in your garden a sign of the health of it, or is it on the decline, just depending on the kind of bugs that you have, or what?
No. Yeah, that's a good question. Rick, the more the merrier. If you don't have anything out there, the pests are going to come, spider mites, aphids, things like that. But when they start showing up, start to eat stuff, then things that eat them start showing up, and the things that eat those start showing up. So the whole idea is have a lot of diversity. And if you have the more different kind of critters you have, the more of a balance you have out there. You know, sort of like, you know, you used to have less problem with deer diseases when there are wolves eating the deers. You get rid of the wolves, get more deers, get diseases. So it's good to have a healthy balance. If you got something good to eat, something's going to show up to eat it, and something's going to show up to eat whatever shows up to eat stuff. So it's kind of cool. And in the end, though, we're the largest predator out there. We decide who's going to be the big boss.
But I just always wondered there because, you know, some people, they want to keep everything so nice and neat. And then if they see some bugs or like some ants or something, they're just like, oh, my goodness, I need to kill it and get it away out of my garden. But it's a real sign that things are healthy, though.
Yeah, it is. From the ecology, the more the merrier. But when it comes to psychology and sociology, we want to keep things neat and orderly. You don't have a bunch of weeds in your lawn on one hand, but on the other hand, a weed-free lawn, you'll never find that in nature. So it's a man-made creation. So a lot of times we're trying to control things. We're trying to sway things towards one outcome or another. And usually as soon as we look the other way, the river flows right back. The woods close up behind us. It's good. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize that tiny little spiders and aphids and little bugs and stuff, that's what hummingbirds eat. Hummingbirds don't just flit around and sip nectar. You know, they get their protein from aphids and tiny little insects and spiders and things like that. That's where they get their protein. And we just don't realize this. If you get rid of the caterpillars, what are birds going to eat? You know, that kind of thing. So it's all good. Just depend on how much you can tolerate. Or as I tell people, if you just take your glasses off, a lot of problems disappear because there's a lot of them out there.
Now, that's a pretty good way to look at it, Felder. Pretty good way to look at it.
You know, there's a lot of different worldviews out there, and I'm sort of a live and let live kind of person. I will do what I need to keep my stuff in order. But if things don't go exactly the way they need to go or ought to go, I try to adjust my outcome expectations a little bit. To me, the glass is neither half empty nor half full. It's a wonderful vessel. Let's see what we can do with it. So, meanwhile, let's slide down to Hattiesburg. Sue, thank you for calling in today. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I have a question for you about banana trees.
Okay.
This is only my second year of growing one, and it didn't do too well last year. It grew, but not as high as my neighbor's banana tree.
Right.
Right now, it's just all died down, and I see that some people cut them to the ground. I'm not sure if I should do that or let the vegetation that's left maybe enrich the plant. Also, I was wondering about putting a slow-release fertilizer on it, or I'm not sure how to take care of it.
Okay, well, first of all, do you know about daylilies and cannas and things like that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Same thing. Same. This is just a big canna. That's all it is. It's a herbaceous plant. Where they grow naturally is tropical. They never die down. They grow all the time. That's the reason you have bananas all the time. From when a banana plant first comes up out of the ground to when you can actually harvest something to eat, it takes something like a year and a half. And if they die down to the ground, they have to get started over again. See, so in the tropics, they grow all the time, so you always have some bananas. So what happens here, we put them out there, and they get a freeze, which they're not used to. They just die to the ground. Well, north, they'll get completely killed. They die to the ground because the top part's got too much moisture. It just freezes. And so they have to start over again the next year. The people who cut them down, a lot of times they cut them down for neatness because those things can get really slimy really quick. But a lot of times they'll leave a foot or a foot and a half or so, sometimes 2 feet of the lower trunk, instead of cutting it all the way to the ground, and they'll pile a bunch of leaves around that. And if you can keep just that much alive, keep it from freezing all the way to the ground, a lot of times they'll get enough head start the next spring to actually make bananas because it doesn't freeze all the way to the ground and start over. So if you're going to cut them back for neatness sake, leave 2 or 3 feet of the trunks, and then pile a whole bunch of leaves all up around, real leaves all up around them, and see if they don't get off to good. Not only that, but as those leaves decompose, they'll actually feed and enrich the soil. So you don't need to worry about fertilizer, especially this time of year. We want to fertilize stuff in the late winter or the spring at the beginning of growing season. So I'd cut them down, pile a bunch of leaves, and then in the spring, maybe just a little fertilizer, and that's about it.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Appreciate your call. Thank you. Java, you know, I've been doing this program here, been doing a radio program for a little over 40 years, but here on MPB for, I guess, close to 20 years now, and there's been some weird stuff we've talked about, and I've thrown out some weird challenges. And any idea what the last time I threw out a weird challenge? I can't remember.
I want to see, you threw out what does... looking for the words that sound like bad words. But that was a challenge you threw out about 6 months ago.
Look, words that sound nasty, but they're real gardening words.
Yeah.
I came out with a challenge for folks who might have a little levity if they can keep it clean. A Southern Garden Winter Limericks.
Okay.
Limericks, but you want to hear the one I came up with?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. To my neighbors, my garden looks littered. Over bottle trees that seem to just glitter. But their all-year fright turned to seasonal delight when my holiday lights make them flicker.
You kept it clean. I'm happy.
I did. You know, Limerick's a clean place. You know, it ain't all that side of town. You know, I'm just saying. Anyway, I got some other things to yak about, but let's go over to Neshoba County, see what Bill's up to on this kind of a it's a beautiful day out there. Bill, how you doing today?
I'm pretty good, and you?
So far, so good.
Thanks for taking my call. I had a tree cut down in my front yard recently. It was really suffering, so we put it out of its misery. The guy who cut it down had one of those machines that grinds up everything, you know, the stump and all of the leaves and everything.
Right.
And so he asked me if I wanted them, and I said, sure. And so he dumped them by the side of the yard, and I got the wheelbarrow out and went and dumped them to suppress the grass between my raised beds.
Yeah, that's a good
now
place.
Now I'm wondering, you know, they're brand new. Did I make some kind of irreversible mistake? Should I let them sit for a while, or?
Oh no! It's a good idea, but we're conflating two different things. On one hand, leaves and wood chips and mulch and things on top of the ground, they slowly decompose based on whatever nutrients they get from the air and water and splash and dirt. So mulch lasts a long time on top of the ground and only gets what falls from the air. On the other hand, if you take that stuff and you mix it into your soil, then all of a sudden the things in the dirt, like the beneficial bacteria and fungi and earthworms, they come into play. And because there's a lot of bacteria in the soil, good bacteria, when you mix fresh wood chips and all into the dirt, the bacteria that decompose those need nitrogen, and they pull all the available nitrogen into them. So when you mix fresh stuff into the dirt, it can temporarily deplete the nitrogen in the soil. It just simply need to add a little extra. Or put them to one side, let them go through that initial decay, which takes, you know, anywhere from weeks to months, and then they're ready to go in the dirt. So right at first, fresh stuff takes nitrogen out of the soil, but only when it's mixed into the soil. On top of the ground, it is perfectly fine. A lot of people mix that up. They don't understand. So as long as it's on top of the ground, you got zero problems. You actually have a nice little beneficial thing.
Well, great. Any idea how long that might last?
Well, it depends. You know, a lot of, you know, those wood grinding machines, that's really coarse, chunky stuff. You know, there's a lot of fine stuff mixed mm-hmm. in with it. And it's got a lot of real dirt mixed in with it, which will help it decompose a little bit faster than if it just bark on top of the ground. So, you know, over the wintertime, it's going to break down a pretty good bit, but it'll still be nice and firm underfoot. Depending, if you put it at least 3 or 4 inches deep, it's going to be fine. But you may notice that it may feel kind of warm in the wintertime because you mix dirt in. The stump grinders, they mix dirt in with that stuff. So it's going to actually decompose more quickly than just sitting on top of the ground by itself, but not as fast to mix into the dirt. So anyway, it's going to last a pretty good bit. One thing to watch for, this may alarm you, starting next late summer or fall, for the next couple of years, you may see a lot of mushrooms popping up in that stuff. Mm-hmm. This is normal. We have a lot of natural wood decay fungi. And when they've decomposed wood for a certain while and the weather conditions are right, the temperatures, the moisture, and they feel good, they're going to do their version of flowering, and that's little mushrooms. So you'll have different kind of mushrooms pop up in it. They're not a problem to your garden. It's just happy fungi slowly breaking down your mulch. So don't worry about the little mushrooms that pop up, really.
Okay. Are any of them edible?
Some are, but I never get, for liability reasons, I never get into that, because all I got to do is say, this is edible, and one person misunderstands and eats the wrong thing. So for liability reasons, I never discuss edible mushrooms, ever.
Okay.
There's going to be some funny ones out there, though. Look for ones called stinkhorns. If you get a chance, Google stinkhorn mushroom, stinkhorn fungi, and you can find some really weird stuff.
Okay.
I see those at mulch all the time. Anyway, you've done a good thing.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right.
And have a great day.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right. You know, I didn't want to get into stinkhorn stuff. But let's go down to Van Cleve. Jamie, what's going on down south?
Hey, I love your show. You're just so full of information. I live in Van, yes, and I listen to it all the time. But I have a question. I have had a garden, and over the past 20 years, I have depleted it, and nothing really grows in it. Of course, I got clay soil. What I'm wondering, I have bunches of leaves. If I was to cover my garden with the leaves, I can't get out there and rototill it or nothing, I'm 60, in my 60s. But if I was to pile it with leaves And last year, a person was throwing away a lot of fertilizer, so I got it. And if I put some high nitrogen on top of it, because I just listened to the previous caller, and also in my garden, I had those puff balls, because you mentioned the mushrooms just previously.
Right, right.
So I just need help re-nutriating my garden. So
And by the way, that is a great word, re-nutriating. I like it. I really like it.
Thank you.
Re-nutriating my garden. a couple of things. First of all, it's not too late, but it's really too late to sow seeds of anything like crimson clover seed or ryegrass. But if you live anywhere near a co-op or someplace or a farmer shop and can get some crimson clover seed, that stuff grows over the wintertime. It grows roots into even the worst clay. And in the springtime, it has lots of leaves, and it helps suck the moisture out so the garden dries out quicker. And then you can just dig it into the dirt or else cut it off and then plant around the clover. And as the clover roots die, they make root holes or paths for new roots. So, but anyway, to answer your question, if you've got a bunch of leaves, it's really not much better you could do than spread real tree leaves over an area and just let them break down over the wintertime. Worms will come up at night and eat those, and as they go back into the dirt, they leave little holes, worm-shaped holes, and then air and water and nutrients and roots and all. So worms can do a good job of digging if you'll just feed them, and that's what leaves do. So if you want to cover it with leaves, if you don't already have a bunch of fertilizer, get this stuff called cottonseed meal. It doesn't take much. A good dust, a pint jar will cover a 10-foot by 10-foot area. But that's a really good natural source of nitrogen that helps leaves decompose. But it also has protein in it, which beefs up earthworms, and they get big and bulky. They do a better job of eating and digging stuff down deep. So leaves and cottonseed meal are my go-to on top of the ground soil improvements. That's what I do.
All right. I just have one more question. So, I mean, I got lots of leaves, so can I just, like, put lots of leaves on it? I mean,
put deep. Sure. Absolutely. But if you're going to do that, it really does help to throw a little cottonseed meal on there, because what breaks those leaves down is not just moisture and air, mechanical stuff like mowing and chopping, but also the bacteria that do the real decomposition, they need nitrogen. And there's not any better nitrogen, slower, longer, gentler, than cottonseed meal. And it also beefs up your earthworms, and they'll take it from there. So if you don't already have fertilizer, get a little cottonseed meal and just dust it. Again, a pint jar for a 10-foot by 10-foot area, that ain't much. That's a pound.
Does it matter what kind of leaves? Because I got a variety of trees.
The two leaves that are the hardest to break down, that take the longest to break down because of cover this waxy covering, magnolia leaves and pine needles. They take longer to break down than other leaves, but all the rest of them together, it is not. You'll hear people say, "Oh, you don't want to put oak leaves out because it blah blah." No, none of that's true. Magnolia and pine needles take a long time to break. All the rest of them are perfectly fine. And if you can run a lawnmower over them to sort of break them up a little bit, they'll really fire up your dirt real quick. But that's not important as much as the cottonseed meal. So it does not matter what kind of leaves, but magnolia and pine needles by themselves take a lot longer to break down.
All right. Well, I thank you very, very much, and I've been meaning to ask this for like a month, at least a month.
Well, I appreciate that. By the way, you mentioned something about I forget what it was. I was talking about ranting and raving. Have you ever heard of falderal?
No.
It's an old word, you know, falderal. It means whimsical nonsense. But around here, we call it felderal.
Yeah.
thank you, Carl. We appreciate it.
I thank you, sir, and you have a blessed day.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Jamie. Thank you. And we appreciate a lady from Tupelo hanging on for a long time named Crystal. Good morning, Crystal. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you?
So far, so good. Thanks for being so patient with us. What's up?
Thanks for taking my call. I love the show. I usually listen to it on Saturdays. Have you ever had gardenias blooming at Christmas time? Because I do right now. I have a gardenias clipping from a plant that I grew about, I guess it's about 20 years ago, and I've had it in a pot this whole time. And I was always told it was a double bloomer, but this year, about a week before Thanksgiving, it got buds all over it, and it has blooms all over it right now. So I have I have it on a south-facing porch. And normally I bring it inside in the wintertime, but this year with all the blooms all over it, I don't want to bring it in because the buds will fall off. So I've been wrapping it up like with a blanket, but it's going to be in the 20s next week, and I don't really know if I can really realistically do that all winter long. So I'm not sure if I should just bring it in and let all the flowers fall off, or if I should just keep trying to wrap it up, or what I should do. It's really pretty. I have gardenias next to, you know, the Christmas wreath, which I've never had, you know, seen that before.
Yeah. Well, let's break it out a little bit. First of all, congratulations on having one that's re-blooming. But, you know, gardenias, typically, you know, they can bloom pretty much nonstop as long as the weather's right. You know, the amount of warmth they get, the sunshine, things like that. And they're actually grown as houseplants up north where it's too cold to grow outside. So it's not unusual to get them to bloom what we think of out of season. And a lot of times to stimulate blooms, it could be plants have hormones just like people and animals do. They have one called traumatin, similar to our adrenaline. If a plant gets upset or pruned or broken or bent or blown around the wind, or, you know, any kind of stress can release this traumatin, which kicks a plant into new growth and flowering. So it could have been that you left it a little too dry one time, or too hot, or something that sort of shocked the plant, and it reinvigorated it with this traumatin, just like, again, like adrenaline makes you want to get up and run. So that's not that unusual. It is unusual for people to notice it, and usually it doesn't happen out in the garden. But you're being in a pot. I think it's just gone through some kind of stress maybe a month or more ago. So anyway, congratulations on that. The other thing is, you're right, when you take a plant from outdoors to indoors, from the warmth, the humidity, the real sunshine, into low light, low humidity, cooler temperatures, the parts of the plant that own it outside can't adapt. And so they just shed, and the plant puts on new parts, adapt in new environments. So that's what happens when you take a plant indoors or outdoors, or even outdoors to indoors. What you might want to do is just leave it out as long as it's above around 35 or 40, leave it outside, and then just bring it into a cool place that's maybe not right under a heater vent, temporarily, and then put it back out as soon as it gets back above 35 or 40. You know, just bring them in temporarily. The only drawback to that is your whole house can smell like gardenias.
Yes.
So yes. If you just bring it in temporarily, temporarily, I think it'll do fine.
You think so? Okay. That's what I was wondering. It's supposed to be in the 20s next week, and so I was a little concerned about that, and to keep trying to do that all the way through January and February.
Well, the thing to do is put it in a bright window where it gets real sunshine through the window, but make sure the heater drafts are not blowing up, because our heaters and air conditioners are designed not just for temperature, but to take humidity out of the air. These plants like humidity. So if there's a heater vent blowing on it, hold a candle or a match nearby, and you'll be able to tell if the flame blows around. Maybe put up a little cardboard or put some kind of barrier so the wind doesn't blow directly on it. That'll help a lot.
Okay. So it would, but as long as it's around above 35, it would be fine on the south-facing porch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But again, if you have to bring it in temporarily, you know, that'd be fine. But once, you know, it could get used to being indoors. They're grown as potted houseplants up north. But they would drop their flowers if exposed to too much of a change too fast for too long. So just try to minimize the shock too much.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you. It's really very pretty and interesting having gardenias at Christmas, for sure.
There you go. And I appreciate your call about that. Let me know how it works. That sounds fun.
All right. Thank you.
All righty. Java.
That was fun. Thank you, Crystal, for holding in. I appreciate her calling in on a Friday, even though she says she listens mostly on the rebroadcast on Saturday. So, thank you, Crystal.
And I hope that Peg from Louisiana is still listening again this week. She says she had a weird white patches on her Mexican petunia. And I'm thinking, you know, I've been growing this a long time. Ain't no such thing. I've never seen it, so it can't exist. Turns out that there is a type of mite, not quite an insect, a little bitty bug called a mite, that gets on the almost exclusively on Mexican petunias. And down in Mexico, it's a thing. And it causes little white-looking patches on the leaves. They're called Erinniums. I even looked up. I mean, I learned a lot of stuff about this. Erinniums. And usually time they, you know, it's just little, it stunts the growth a little bit. Doesn't kill the plant. Stunts the growth, makes them look a little weird. And a lot of times the mites disappear after a few weeks. So it's a temporary passing type of thing. But anyway, the parish extension agent suggested that that she just simply spray the bottom of the leaves with neem oil or any kind of horticultural oil that controls mites. And then prune the plant. Prune the plant gets rid of the worst of the problem, and it stimulates strong new growth that will be free of the mites. So what I would do is I would cut it back, spray what's left with this oil, neem oil, or any kind of miticide, and so that kill it, there's still left on the plant, and then the new growth should come out real nice and clean. Anyway, I learned about a tiny little mite that causes a thing called erinium. I hope somebody calls me up and asks me this later because I will be an expert.
It's funny you started this whole conversation saying that it was something that you hadn't seen, so it didn't exist. And I think a lot of people live their lives like that way. I haven't seen it, so it doesn't matter. It doesn't exist.
You know, there's a word. I don't know if I can find this word. I'll look it up. But it's a really good. It's a syndrome. Where people who have a little bit of experience or a little bit of training, a little bit of knowledge, they tend to overinflate what they know to think that they know more than they really do. And there's actually a syndrome about that. And most of us horticulture is that way. Well, I know it all. No, we don't. No, we don't. And by the way, I still don't know, even with some coaching from Kevin Thrill last week on how to pronounce Zhuzh. I don't know if you heard that conversation last week.
I did, between you and Abram. Because he even went to, I think, Google and looked it up. Spell it one more time for me.
Zhuzh. And I've learned, you know, I read about it in the Oxford Eagle. Oxford Eagle up in Oxford, Mississippi. They put it as a title of one of my I did a column about garden art, and they said zoos up the garden. I think I don't even know how to pronounce that. Anyway, what it means is to make something more lively and interesting or stylish or appealing, usually with some kind of little change or addition. And it's usually the word is followed by up. And I came up with this. Since I put up a bird feeder, the wild birds have really zoozed up my garden. Anyway, it's just a little thing. I don't know how to, you know, I don't know if I could ever use that in a real sentence without laughing or anything. But Zhuzh means to jazz things up. Maybe that's where it comes from, to jazz things up.
Somewhere around there. And I'm looking at the origins. You know, most words are like 1800s, 1700s. This is from like the 1960s. I was looking at the origins, and then it says something about 1960. Zeus.
It's one of those hipster things.
Yeah, it might have came into real prominence around that time.
A beat, man, you really zoos that tune up.
I can see that. I can hear that. And now it's answers to unasked questions from Felder Rushing.
There you go. And I finally remember the name of that effect called the Dunning-Kruger effect, K-R-U-G, Dunning-Kruger effect, where people overestimate their own abilities and knowledge based on just a little experience or a little horticulture training. They're the ones who tend to badmouth what other people are doing because they think they know it all. Anyway, enough of that. The question is,
what does horticulture mean? And before I get to that, what is a garden? I came up for a book called Maverick Gardener. I had to come up with the most succinct definition I could possibly come of what is a garden. And I got my friend Bob Bruzak. He's a professor emeritus of landscape architecture at Mississippi State. Bob helped me come up with this definition of a garden. It's a planned, people-centric space of any size, indoors or out, where plants are cultivated and displayed alongside man-made materials. That's a lot to think about. But anyway, horticulture, it comes from the Latin word hortus, which means garden, and colere, which means to cultivate, the art of cultivating plants in gardens to produce food and medicinal ingredients, ornamental purposes, that kind of stuff. But to cultivate plants in a garden is what horticulture comes from. But they have to have a garden to begin with, which is a planned, people-centric space, not just a wild space, where of any size, indoors or out, where plants are cultivated or displayed alongside man-made materials. So anyway, that's a lot to say that a garden is a place where you do stuff that pleases you. And if you're cultivating it, you are a horticulturist with without all the Dunning-Kruger credentials and stuff. There, I said it. What?
No, you put your stamp on it right there.
There you go. So if people say, I'm a horticulturist. Well, you're not a trained horticulturist. Well, okay, but I cultivate plants for my own pleasure in a garden. That makes me a horticulturist. So I hate to take the wind out of sails of pompous people like myself, but there are a lot of people what I call horti holier than thou. That's another word I came up with. People who, well, I studied this, so I'm, it's soil, it's not dirt. Shut up. Dirt and soil are the same thing, just two different languages. Quick, Java, get me off this rant.
I think Jim from Jackson is coming to save the day, and he also has answered the call about your limerick, Felder.
Okay. Hey, Jim, how are you this morning?
I'm doing fine, Felder. You asked for a little limerick. About fall or winter gardening.
Okay, keep it clean.
All right, here it is. In the winter, gardening is not lost. Lots can be done after the frost. Plant cabbage and kale, they grow without fail, and labor is all they cost.
Well done, Dean. Well done. Brilliant. Thank you, sir. Hey, I want to ask you something, though. You still growing stuff, even though you're the dean emeritus of the law school. You still grow okra back in the corner of the parking lot?
Yes, and my zinnias are still alive back there. I harvested some the other day.
Really? I got a note from a friend of mine that said he finally got some frost in Jackson. But yours is surrounded by buildings and concrete downtown Jackson. So it's like a little microclimate. Still got zinnias, though.
That's right. It does survive the light frost, but we'll have a heavy frost. It'll take everything down.
Yep. Well, that's a brilliant limerick, Dean. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Best to you and Merry Christmas, Felder.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Jim Jackson from
Jim in Jackson, Jim Rosenblatt.
Jim Rosenblatt in Jackson. I said that last time he called, which is a month or so ago. Anyway. We're going to have a whole lot of interesting stuff going on over the next couple of weeks or so. A lot of people are thinking about holidays and gift giving. We're about halfway through Hanukkah now, and a lot of people are thinking about gifting it. Don't forget the gardener. It can be something as simple as a paperwhite bulb. A paperwhite bulb. Put in a little vase with a little water touching just the bottom of it, and it can sprout roots, sprout leaves, and bloom indoors within 3 or 4 weeks. This is a magical thing to give a child who may have trouble focusing. Get them to measure how much did it grow every day. Get them to measure, make a little chart or something like that. But this is a good way to involve kids in something that doesn't take forever and has almost guaranteed results. Paperwhite bulb, a little vase of water, maybe some Mardi Gras beads or something at the bottom the roots can tangle up with so it doesn't flop over. But there are lots of cool little seed packets and a little container with some potting soil and some bulbs and things. A lot of really good little easy gifts for folks who may not have the ability or the desire to get out and have a big, big garden.
So just think about that when you're making your holiday gift list.
Felder, we have another call. Peg in Mandeville wants to join the conversation this morning.
Peg, is this the same Peg from last week?
Yes, it is. And I thank you for getting all my friends in the neighborhood who I haven't talked to know about that little mite that's on our Ruella. But I wanted to tell you the word is zhuzh. Zhuzh. You zhuzh it up. Zhuzh it up. Zhuzh it up. My son's girlfriend in North Carolina is always saying, we got to zhuzh it up.
He's dating a hip gal from the South, I hear. It sounds like the tune of a Mardi Gras song. Zhuzh it up, zhuzh it up, zhuzh it up. You can, Java, can you hear a Mardi Gras song with zhuzh it up?
Zhuzh it up. We put the brass band behind it. We might have on, might be on to something.
so Peg, which is the pair? You told me who you contacted when I said contact. Was that your parish extension office you called?
Yes, it was. It was what's his name?
Yeah. I don't know. But I was right. If I don't know something, call somebody in the county or their parish extension office. A good place to start.
Yeah, it was Will Afton, and he knew right away because he'd seen it.
Yeah, well, that's what extension people do. They, you know, all they do is sit around the office and listen to people with problems, and we look it up and we share with each other. So anyway, I appreciate that. I won't remember the name of all that, but I remember. Yeah, there's a little bug that gets on them. Just cut them back and spray them, and they'll be fine.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you. So you're up your day.
I appreciate it. Okay, Java. We got to come up with something about this, man. Zhuzh it up.
We may figure something out before the pledge drive and come up with something. I don't know. Zhuzh it up.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be, I think I mentioned that because of the solstice. It's not a religion. It's a natural phenomenon that the days are getting shorter until next Thursday night, then it's getting long again. Worldwide through history, people have noted this change, you know, the rebirth of the solar year or whatever you want to call it. And the people at Stonehenge set up these big rocks and made it so that when the sun set and rose at a specific time of the year at the solstice, it came up right in between these rocks. It was done on purpose that way thousands of years ago. And I've been there. It's a bunch of really weird people. Let me tell you, they show up with fake deer antlers and all sorts of dances and music, tambourines and stuff. But I'm going to make one up on the moors. I'm here in England. It's going to be cold. It's going to be maybe snowing. I'm going to set me up a little bitty stone thing using clothespins and see if I can come up with a really fun one.
You may be able to make up something, Felder.
there was just a little bit of a silence there when I said all that.
Well, I know you have been out there because I thought it was pretty cool when you shared the pictures with me about you being out there at Stonehenge and the way the sun comes up in a specific spot. Like it's something to witness. The people back in the day, they knew what they were doing.
Well, the whole thing is this is something that humans on a most basic level we wonder about world and life and what's going on. And this is just one of those seasonal, one of these dramatic changes that give people time to pause and think and ponder. And you know, it's one of the reasons why I've come up with New Year's resolutions and stuff like that. So anyway, it's just something to do to help celebrate something that has been celebrated for thousands of years by the most primitive and the most experienced of people. So however you celebrate the seasonal change, it's going to be a good one. Hopefully better next year. Hopefully better. At any rate, we have hope. Gardeners have hope. We plant for the future, and we do that with hope and expectations. And we share in our failures. We share in our foibles. We share in our successes. And that's what we do every week on the Gestalt Garden. We share what we know. We learn stuff we didn't know. And we wonder about stuff. So
I'm glad to be part of it. I'm horticulturist Phil DeRushian. Me and Java Chapman and all the other folks at Mississippi Public Broadcasting, we hope to take a chance to take a kid to a farmer's market or to a garden center. Give them something that will give them something to look forward to in this new year. Teach them how to do what we do best, and that's get dirty.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.